stay connected to the world around you, KPBS brings you trusted news, compelling stories, and in-depth reporting every day. Wherever life takes you, KPBS is here, on the radio, online, and on the go. Discover more at kpbs.org.
Listener discretion is advised for explicit content.
When I was closing up Les Girls, the parking lot was empty. I went out to my car, and there were still three guys there.
And they won't let me leave. They have my car door. They're laughing. They think it's funny. And so I take my gun, and I
pointed it at them, and I said, I've asked you really nicely.
I have to get home. Oh, the look on their face. So that was a little bit of my stripper energy. I was not going to let anybody frighten me.
Come with me as former stripper and current owner of Les Girls Theater, Cotta Pierce Morgan, peels back the layers of stripper energy, fighting back from the fringes. Cotta gives us unlimited access to a half century of archival material that chronicles her story, as well as the history of Les Girls, the women who dance there, and the fierce activism launched from the unlikely stage of a strip club.
There's many people who don't have the slightest idea what goes on at Les Girls.
When we come back, nude dancers,
the stereotypes,
are some of the dancers also prostitutes?
Could be pretty horrendous.
Doesn't it set you up for the possibility of violence?
The only abuse, physical abuse, that the dancers have ever experienced has been from the Vice Squad.
We obviously had a misunderstanding. We had a thing of improper procedure.
If a vice officer takes control of a young dancer, they feel that the dancers are pretty much their property.
Nobody's coming to save us. We have to save ourselves. You know, fight or flight, I'm the fighter.
Let's begin with chapter one, Stripper Life. Or, can you handle the naked truth? I need to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more of stripper energy, fighting back from the fringes. And just a reminder, this is also available as a video podcast. Go to kpbs.org/stripper energy for more information.
Figuring out the right sport for your kid can feel overwhelming. I'm taking that journey with my son, Dorian, exploring different sports and revisiting the fields that I grew up playing. Together, we're searching for the right fit and maybe reconnecting with a few old memories along the way. It's Game Time Decision, a new series from KPBS. Join us at kpbs.org/gametime.
How does one day you're sitting around Wendy's or Coco's and you say, gee, I think I'd like to be a nude dancer. I mean, how did you get into it?
While dancers today may bristle at the term stripper, Cotta embraced it in the 1970s.
And so when I became a stripper, I told everybody because it changed their perception of who I was. And it made me look tough. It made me look like, don't mess with me. I love the whole stereotype of the stripper. But I'm sure there are a lot of misconceptions.
I think before I started dancing, I had some misconceptions about it myself.
Strippers are
sexy.
I think if you ask some strippers too, they might call themselves sex workers.
There is a stigma with sex work.
Strippers are hoes, bro.
They have to deal with the stereotype of like being like a prostitute.
I think I know the difference.
And yet that is often the assumption that the two are synonymous with each other.
I wouldn't want, per se, my like daughter or girlfriend stripping.
No strippers in my family, no strippers for a girlfriend, nothing.
Maybe you got kids in school or you meet people and you want to kind of be treated not identified as a stripper, then you'd probably say you're something else.
But even today, in 2024, stereotypes persist about women working in adult entertainment. That's why decades after dancing at Les Girls, asked to have her name and face not be revealed.
For the purposes of this project, let's just call me Pepper, or if you like, Dr. Pepper.
Yep, it's time to meet some real strippers.
And it's funny, hearing us called strippers, I realized that we were in fact strippers. I had always thought of myself as an entertainer or a dancer, and looking back, I realized that I was in fact a stripper.
But whatever the title, it was a job these women needed, and Les Girls proved to be a unique workplace that's now filled with the stories of all these women.
All that past, you could hear them clunk, 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 walking across the stage, the high heel footprint, the stripper energy.
Kata feels empowered by the women who've passed through Les Girls Theater and by what she calls stripper energy.
The energy has seeped into the walls. It's like if someone's a smoker and you can smell it in the drywall. You know, you can feel the movement and the breath, you know, of the strippers. So definitely, you know, I can feel the ghosts. And for that reason, I feel strongly how I want to keep this place as a landmark of San Diego history. You know, it represents a lot about activism, you know, all the things that happened to us.
We'll expose all the things that happened. But first, let's get to know a trio of women who worked over three different decades in adult entertainment. From the turbulent 1960s, with its civil rights struggle, Cold War, and generation gap.
My name? Bobby Boobie. Because they were calling me Bobby Boobie, and I said, no, 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 no. This is Les Girls. I have to be Bobby Boobie.
Then, from the 1970s, with Watergate, hippies, and the rise of feminism.
Hi, I'm Kata Pierce Morgan. They know me as Kathleen or Kathy. It depends on what venue I'm in.
And then from the 1980s with Ronald Reagan, home computers, and tabloid talk shows.
You know, I used multiple names when I was dancing. I used Tia, I used Pepper, I used Raina.
All three danced at Les Girls Theater in San Diego, a venue that opened in 1968.
When you look around, you know, the stage is the same as it was. It's exactly the same.
My first impression was that I felt like I had landed on another planet. I'd had no experience with that kind of atmosphere. So coming from this Catholic background, I was so surprised and shocked. And I wouldn't say it was scary. I'd say I was dumbfounded, and I didn't quite know how to take it. And this was a circuit. It was Les Girls, Showplace, the bedroom, and the naughty spot. And there was a pink car, and it drove us from one club to the other. And there are generally three strippers in the car with the chauffeur.
At that time, I was just dancing topless and making pretty good money because I needed to take care of my three children. So what do? You work at night, and you take care of your kids in the daytime.
I came to dancing out of necessity. My boyfriend and I ran out of money. I didn't really have any job skills. I didn't know how to waitress. It wasn't anything I was even inclined to learn how to do. And then I saw the ad for dancing, and I'm like, I think I could do that. We had to audition. Thank goodness I had some sense of rhythm, and I didn't really have dancer clothes. I had some lingerie. I had a trim figure. And they hired me.
They did not know what to do with me. I remember the awkwardness of it because I was a trained ballerina. I wasn't very sexy. They tried to edge me up. So at Les Girls, they showed porn movies. And so I had porn splashing on my body. You know, I'm pretty sure on my back I had people, you know, having sex.
I loved the being up on stage, getting under the lights, dancing, the physicality, the art of it, and the costumes.
So the first gown that I had was an all sequence long gown. And basically it was just a regular gown. So I put the breakaway zipper in the back.
Oh my gosh, I loved the theatrical costumes and the art of removing a costume in a certain way.
You know, you kind of came on stage and you walked around and you had gloves. And so you took your gloves off and you know, dropped them.
Then you can look over your shoulder and be flirty about the way you take the costume off.
Reached back and unzipped your breakaway gown, and when it came off, the audience gasped.
That is fun.
You can do things suggestively. So when you move the boa and it falls, it's touching your body as it goes down to your arm. It's a hand caressing you.
So there was a lot of things to take off, with the exception of pasties. At that time, we had to wear pasties and a G-string. I did a show where I got the guys out of the audience. Come on up here, come on up here. I'm gonna show you how to bounce your boobs. So, you know, put your hands up here like this, and you do this. Okay, so you'd see these guys. Oh, 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 oh. And I had a little skit that went along with it. Well, this is Mo, this is Joe, and I got my mojo working.
If you can meet somebody's eye and really smile at them, you can reach somebody at a deeper level. Yeah, there's people may look at you and objectify you in a certain way, but if you can meet somebody's eye and really smile at them, you touch them in a way that's different. People remember that.
I need to take one last break, and then I'll be back with more of Stripper Energy, fighting back from the fringes.
This season on Everybody's Doing It with Miss Lolly, I'm going to classes, workshops, and private venues designed to enrich and broaden our sexual horizons. And I'm taking you with me. I meet with an erotic mindfulness coach, get a pelvic floor exam, talk with new moms, and even put on my dancing shoes and take a beginning burlesque class, and much more. Find season two of Everybody's Doing It with Miss Lolly wherever you get your podcasts, and come join me in my search for fun and sexy adventures that are available to you.
We are in the infamous Slay Girls dressing room.
I loved the camaraderie with the girls. When I hear Kata talk about it being therapeutic, there is definitely a level of therapy in being with women. And when you take your clothes off, there is an added level of vulnerability.
And we were really well structured as a body of women, you know, to create an environment that met our needs.
I used my dancing career to put me through school.
You weren't stuck to a schedule. You were able to dance when you wanted to and whatever hours you wanted.
At one point, my girls' theater was threatened with a 30-day closure by the police. So Kata asked each dancer to write down how that would impact them. And when I read these statements, I was so moved that I decided to ask Pepper to read the one she'd written.
Oh, here, look at this. I'm a full-time student and tuition is very costly. I've worked here for 6 years to put myself through school. I have a car payment, insurance payment, and regular monthly maintenance bills. There is no other job that will allow me to keep my car, go to school full-time, and live a regular, normal life. If you take away my job, you take away my life and my hopes for the future. Wow, look at me.
It was so poignant, it was so compelling.
So since that time, I've graduated college.
I never showed anybody those statements, those handwritten, you know, in blue and black ink. I never showed it to anybody. I didn't think it mattered. So apparently it does, you know, how they felt.
I mean, in the end, it was really a great life for me. I did it for a long time. I danced for almost 18 years.
Back when I started dancing in 71, I was coming out of a decade, you know, in the 1950s, the 1960s, where women were less empowered than men. The pay was inequitable. With the attitude of what men had towards women during those times, I really didn't see much difference between being a wife or a girlfriend or a secretary and being a stripper. I felt taking your clothes off was much more honest.
I probably thought that sex workers referred to call girls or, you know, prostitution. And since we weren't involved with that, I never thought of us as sex workers.
So that was part of the stereotypes. They just thought, I think they thought we were loose women. And that was when I was already 30 years old. And so back when we were starting to dance, we had to say that we were working somewhere else because the public generally believed that we were prostitutes.
Oh yes, oh yes. In fact, I bought a house in San Carlos, and two or three doors up, the neighbor, she wouldn't let her husband come down to talk to me. Oh, no, you're not going down there to talk to that woman.
And I was trying to rent a townhouse over in the La Mesa area, and I was truthful about where I was working. The guy thought that I was something like a wild person. He's like, well, I don't know if my wife would let me rent to somebody like you. I said, what do you mean somebody like me? I can show you all of my bank statements for the last 10 years to show you that I make steady money, you know, that I have money in my, I could pay you 10 months in advance of what you're asking for in rent, so you could be assured that you would have your rent money and a deposit on top of that. Well, I just don't think that my wife would trust me. Your wife wouldn't trust you? Sir, I don't even want to talk to you aside from making sure that you have your rent money. And yeah, so I couldn't even get over to look at the place because he wouldn't even let me look at the place just because I was honest about what I did for a living. I remember my first shock was when I was 24 and I went to a party and I said that I was a stripper. And I remember the look on her face, you know, that she was, I don't know, disgusted, mistrusting. It was such an awkward party for me. And that was my first taste that maybe not everybody's gonna react the way, you know, I would like them to react. Let me think, how old I was, probably 23 or 24. I was renting from a lady in Point Loma. We lived on West Point Loma Boulevard, my boyfriend and I. And I ended up suing her for slandering me. She told the neighbors that my boyfriend was pimping for me. I won the lawsuit, but in the end I lost the war because I ended up having to move anyway. And so I won. I had a jury trial and I won, and they awarded me $100 because even with winning, all they thought it was worth was $100 because they couldn't really see I was harmed by that much. I mean, it's terrible to think about that because sure, you're vindicated, but are you really? Because they didn't really see how I was harmed by that. You know, calling somebody a prostitute, it's terrible.
Stanley tonight.
Yeah.
Some new dancers here. It's going to be something. They're going to tell us what's it like to dance nude in San Diego's clubs, particularly lay girls in the Body Shop.
All right, this is one of these questions. Does your family know what you do?
Yes.
And have they ever watched you dance?
No.
All right, did they try to discourage you from dancing nude?
No.
They never did?
No.
All right, what is it like being up there? I know you're very attractive, and is it a very exhilarating feeling to be in front of all these men, or do you... You kind of tune them out. What are you thinking when you're up there?
Oh, my goodness.
I couldn't believe what he asked me.
Stanley.
This is a copy. It was when I was on the Roger Hedgecock show on July 24th, 1990. Let's see if we can hear it.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Morning Talk Forum. And welcome now to our studios, Kathleen Pierce and Pepper.
You know, he had a preconceived idea that he stuck with, you know, and there was no changing his mind, you know, as the interview goes on.
She was extremely happy that her daughter's naked body was visible to strangers in a room full of men who were looking at you dancing. She was happy about that. Now, come on.
Oh, my God. What a conservative tool.
Because I'm outraged, frankly, mm-hmm. at the equation of women's rights with the idea that a woman dancing naked or semi-naked, mm-hmm. in front of men for the purpose of sexual arousal and fantasizing would be equated somehow with women's rights. I find that to just be an appalling mm-hmm. Misstatement mm-hmm. of what you would call a normal moral situation.
Mm-hmm. Fucking asshole, Roger Hedgecock. I listen to that and it makes me angry all over again.
So wait, you're a manager who hires people for money to stand up and take their clothes off in front of men.
And you know, and I wasn't a criminal.
At the time of the 1990 interview, Roger Hedgecock had been forced out of the mayor's office by a scandal involving campaign funds. But he rebounded quickly with a conservative talk radio show whose guests reflected Hedgecock's attitudes.
They don't need to go on the stage and disrobe and do that, so they can earn money another way. And I think people are born with a conscience, and I think they know that what they're doing is really wrong.
Oh my gosh, when I was listening to some of the people that called in on the shows or asked questions on the shows, that was their opinion. they thought we were prostitutes. We have skewed thinking, so there's something wrong with us.
Well, Lisa, let's get Pepper's reaction because she doesn't agree with you at all.
Not at all. I think that until you have set foot in into Lake Girls, that you really don't know what you're talking about.
Pepper, do you feel exploited by the Lake Girls situation? You're hired to take your clothes off in front of men?
Not at all. I'm an entertainer. I have never felt that I am dancing for the sexual arousement of men. If that happens, that's something they have to deal with.
I was so irritated.
Are some of the dancers in some of the clubs also prostitutes?
Are you a prostitute? Are you an idiot? You know?
All right, do you make a lot of money as a nude dancer?
I made just enough to pay my bills. That's all I really need.
All right, but do these men want to go out with you?
I haven't asked them that.
I don't know why he wasted the airtime with that dumb question.
You know, if two strippers are going to be on TV, they are not thinking in terms of what we represented.
Yes, I was very young. And looking back at how we were treated, I am really proud of myself for not losing my composure. I think it's really a testimony to the culture of our TV programs that were on at the time, and to really the United States at that time, in particular, our San Diego culture that was happening at the time. They did give Kata and I a voice to talk about what was happening with the police. However, the general sort of leering nature that these men in positions of power and these men that had voices on the TV programs, that was very immature. I didn't think they were always very serious when they were talking to us.
All right, so you are happy then that the Vice Squad now says that ID cards are not required from your club. And if they had been required, would you have gotten out of this dancing?
Yes, I would have.
You would have. No, you would not have continued because you felt that this would have been a way to put you in jail.
I believe so, or worse.
All right.
The or worse scenario is what these outlets missed. They were missing the bigger picture of looking at how the stereotypes held by the public and fueled by some media could have serious real-world consequences for these dancers.
A lot of things happened because of the stigmatization, but what's most significant to me was when one of the dancers, who was a San Diego State University English major, was murdered by Cleophas Prince, the serial killer.
It would appear to many that 20-year-old Tiffany Page Schultz led a double life.
Tiffany Schultz may have been a student by day, but by night, it seems she was a dancer at this local strip joint. Her neighbor said she talked of having to take a job that she was not very proud of.
That was a horrible thing because even the media was playing up on the fact that she had a secret life, that she was a stripper. Really going into that kind of assumption that, well, you know, it's not gonna happen to polite society. It happened to her because she was a dancer. She was a dancer at Lake Girls. But when she was murdered, immediately they had me down at the station in a windowless room within less than 24 hours. And they had me listening to a tape of, had to be a policeman, but it was, the guy was talking in a really gross way. He was saying, well, she was murdered because she refused to participate in after work orgies with the strippers, which of course I responded, well, that's a male fantasy. And if you think about it, you know, there's societal attitude that she deserved it. She deserves to be murdered. Because she was an adult entertainment dancer. It had nothing whatsoever to do with us.
That societal attitude allowed police to think that certain murders, assaults, and disappearances could be treated differently and even ignored if the victims fit the category of NHI, or no humans involved.
They're talking about the fringe women, and that being a exotic dancer, we were lumped right in with the hookers and the drug addicts and the biker gang women.
Wow, that's very interesting. I did not know that strippers had been put into that category. That's really sad, because what it does is it's demoralizing, and it takes us down to the level of animal. They're not even thinking of us as being human beings, as less than humans. That's really sad.
Actually, it's a godsend. It's giving me clarity as to why they treated us the way they did. And I think about the cops, the different cops, you know, the things that they did to us, and they did it without accountability. And for once, I'm starting to see it. I never understood it. I never understood how they could be like that. I thought they were just assholes, you know, and just assholes. But in truth, they were living this code that the police had, that society had, and that's why they felt they were condoned to do the things that they did, even having threats with us and sex with us and arrests with us. And they thought we were not human and we could be treated that way.
But what cops and society in general didn't count on was stripper energy.
I didn't know I had stripper energy. Absolutely, I was energetic. I was sassy. I was feisty.
That energy has been in me, I think, my whole life. And it's funny because I have used that energy in other areas of my life, and it's come out with a ferociousness. And my daughter has called me a dragon mama. I'm this tough young woman, you know. I'll punch you in the nose. And I did. I'm not afraid anymore. It's not that I shouldn't be afraid. I'm just not, because no one's coming to save me. I've got to save myself.
And I think that real courage, you know, as I became an activist, is going into very scary, fearful situations where you're taking on authorities and you're telling the public what it was really like. And you have to be afraid, you know, I mean, you have to be afraid because of retaliation, and we'll be talking more about that later. But I did it anyway, and I think that's what courage is when you do it even though you're scared.
And we'll be talking about more of this in the next chapter of Stripper Energy, Fighting Back from the Fringes. In order to understand the climate of fear Kata and the dancers were living with for decades, we need to meet Kata's late husband, James Morgan. He's the not-so-silent bystander whose lifelong refusal to put up with abuse, injustice, corruption, and harassment is where the whole story of Lay Girls really begins. So get ready for Let It All Hang Out, or how a Texas Baptist went all nude to shock San Diego.
So Jim decided he wanted the girls to be able to go nude. And that's when the show in the back room, Let It All Hang Out, was born.
From El Centro to everywhere, we're Voices del Valle.
Voices del Valle?
Voices del Valle is a teen-produced podcast about coming of age in California's Imperial Valley.
I love Voices del Valle.
On the next episode of Voices del Valle, we will talk with teens about their cheer and soccer championship seasons. I've got to listen to that. Voices del Valle, fresh voices, bold stories made in the valley.
Voices del Valle, find us on KPBS or wherever you get your podcasts.